What's your Everest? You know, the highest mountain on earth, a metaphor for a goal that is so big that it scares you to even speak it out loud. That goal that takes more than a season, a year, or maybe takes a lifetime to even accomplish. I'm Colleen Rue, the voice of the mountain and your host as we meet inspiring individuals who know what it's like to set big goals and how to accomplish them. Welcome to My Everest, a 29029 podcast.
We are down to the wire. Two minutes. Let's go.
What you are hearing is 29029 co-founder Colin O'Brady's recording of the final finisher at Snow Basin 2019.
Let's go. All the way through.
This guy has seconds to finish before the clock rolls over to 36 hours and the event is over.
You got to keep going all the way. You got one minute.
He left the base of the mountain less than an hour before and needed to complete his fastest lap of the weekend in order to earn his red hat. This moment was burned into the memories of all those who witnessed it. It's a story that is retold season after season on the slopes of the 29029 mountains. Did you ever hear about the guy in Snow Basin who barely finished before the clock ran out?
That is what it's all about. Got it done by a few seconds to the wire. Last finisher of the day. There he is.
Everest, baby, Everest.
It's become legend that inspires new generations of climbers every year. But who is that guy? Does he even know how much his story has inspired generations of 29029 participants? Well, we're going to find out. As we dive into Kyle's story, we have to set up a little bit of history. He was introduced to 29029 by Thomas Zebley, a legend at 29029. Thomas Zebley has single-handedly convinced so many people to take on 29029 because when he experienced it for the first time himself, he was sold. He realized that this was something that could change people's lives. When Kyle heard Zebley's story, he wasn't totally convinced. It took a few months before he was all in and decided that 29029 was going to be his goal for 2019. Kyle was following the training plan and being the former soccer athlete that he was, maybe did a little too much, ended up actually injuring himself just a few weeks before the event. When he made it to Utah, there was some trepidation. He didn't know if this calf was going to actually hold up. The first day started out great, but then a misstep high on the mountain above aid station 2 caused that calf injury to reignite. Kyle went back to bed in his tent on Friday night with 7 ascents under his belt, not knowing if he would get any more.
I was surprised at how good I felt after they taped me up and stretched and massaged everything out. And it's like, all right, we're going to do one more. I'm going to get to 8 and then I'll probably call it quits. Like, I was very hesitant about my calf at that point. One of the guys that we work with, Mike Weinberger, I see him as I'm going up that 8th ascent and he's on number 8 also. So we kind of hiked together for a couple of them. And the former college athlete in me is like, well, if Mike's only going to do 8, I'm at least going to do 9. Like, I can't let him beat me. So we do that. And it's clear, like, Mike's like, well, I don't want to get made fun of or, you know, have guys like, you know, in the office, like saying stuff. So if Kyle's going to do one more, I'm going to do one more. So we kind of push each other through 10 and Mike stops we both stopped at the bottom to get something to eat. I'd kind of joked with everybody all along that, you know, no matter what happened, come kickoff for the Florida Gators, I was going to be down there watching it. And like, that was just kind of going in the back of my mind. It's like, well, kickoff's in 4 more hours. So it's do or die time. And my wife's texting me, you know, don't be ridiculous. Like, you can do one more. So I have that support back home. As you know, she's kind of texting me, pushing me, do one more. You know, I'm sitting down in the main lodge, like eating a sandwich, pounded a few Gatorades. Jared LeMayo comes in and he said, how are you doing? Like, we kind of saw you, but we haven't talked since you started cramping up. I'm kind of talking myself out of going any further at that point. He's good friends with Teresa. You know, we all worked together for a while. And one of them says, just do one more. So like, all right, I'm going to do one more. And it gets to the point where I don't think I'm going to have time to finish. My wife texts me on the gondola ride down. I'm like, I'm not going to have time to finish. Like, it's been a good run. I'm falling short, but you know, health issues got the better of me on this. Like, I'm going to walk off here with my head held high. Like, I gave it my best effort. And Teresa says, once you get that red bib, no one can take that from you. You might not be able to do two more, but you can do one more and at least get your red bib. So that's my plan. I'm going up, I'm finishing the ascent, getting ready to get my red bib. And I see at the top, there's Jesse and there's Zebs. They were asking me where I was at. And I said, I got my red bib. That was kind of the goal after everything that happened. And Jesse said, I will never forget this. Like, he leans in the very intense way that Jesse can be sometimes, and kind of gets right in my face and says, you can do one more. I'm looking at him. I look at my watch. I'm doing some quick math. I'm like, all right, I know it takes like 12 minutes to get down the gondola. There's an hour and 15 minutes till we're done. Our fastest lap was an hour and 5 minutes. And that was the very first lap. Zebs looks at me and says, you can do it. Do one more. I tend to be a very logical person. And for whatever reason, like, all logic was thrown out the window at that point in time. I was just like, okay, we're going to do one more, I guess. And Jesse has his hand on my shoulder. He's walking me to the gondola, and he brings me over to Mark, calls Brent over. Jesse knows, like, I've been struggling with nutrition and cramping and all this stuff. He's like, get with Mark. If you're going to do one more, Mark, tell him what he needs to eat, what he needs to drink on the way down. And if you're serious about doing one more, I'm going to send these two guys down to pace you. They're going to meet you halfway at the halfway point. I'm like, oh, okay. Seems easy enough. So Mark hands me like 17 of the little Cokes and, you know, a whole bunch of stuff to get me all hyped up and ready to go. And on the gondola, just like I've been doing all day, I text my wife. She goes and flips the script 180 degrees. She's like, what? You're going to do one more? What happens if you get stuck out there? You know, it's getting close to dark. What's going to happen? And, you know, I just send her like a very short response back of, it's going to be okay. I'll figure it out. Having played sports my entire life and through college, like, I've been in those workouts and in those games where, you know, like, we're about to go to a very dark, dark place right now. At that point, like, on the gondola ride down, I'm sitting there on my phone. I'm creating a playlist of, you know, every dark hate you pump up song that I can get. And I pull my AirPods out and I'm getting ready to put them in. So we get down to the bottom and, you know, I said to you, I don't have time to go brand this last one. I'm going for it. But as I'm starting up that first miserable, steep, long hill, I hear one of the volunteers' radio go off. Hey, we've got one more coming. He's trying to make it in the last whatever amount of time it was. Let me know as he passes y'all on the mountain. So I hear that in the back of my mind. And for whatever reason, there's like, I can kind of hear doubt in whoever was on the other end of that radio. And it made me mad a little bit, like a little bit of extra motivation, you know, because my personality is the fastest way to get me to do something is tell me that I can't do it. So at that point, it's like, all right, failure is not an option. They're doubting me. I'm going to prove y'all wrong. So I make it to the first aid station, and I see coming down is Mark and Brent. We meet just behind the aid station. After you get up that hill, it's kind of a deceiving incline that happens there. Brent looks at me and he says, "How are you feeling? Are you ready to do this?" And we stop for like 30 seconds and he gives me his water bottle. He's like, "Take a few hits off of this. You're making great time, but we've got to go." And he said, "We're going to start jogging in intervals here to make sure that we get this in on time." Okay, this sounds like a terrible idea all of a sudden, but at this point, like, we're pot committed, we're in. And we start jogging and we do this back and forth until we get to the fire break road. And we stop at the, you know, the top of the hill, right as you're entering the fire break road. And we have the same conversation. Brent and Mark both look at me and say, "We got to pick up the pace on this fire break road. We're not stopping." So, you know, we start jogging faster. We'll say we're at a full on run. We're hitting the switchbacks and we get to the point where I can see the gondola at the top. It gets a little bit steeper there. And at this point, like, I am redlining all day. We've passed like the actual finish line and it doesn't really dawn on me because I'm too tired to think. Everybody is standing right underneath the gondola, yelling and cheering me on. When we get to that point, I mean, it's still probably 100 yards away from the actual finish line. I stop and I'm like, "Oh yeah, we have done it." And everybody starts screaming at me, "No, you got to keep going. You got to keep going." Well, as I start to run again, I slip and I fall face first into the gravel. And I'm laying there and I'm like, man, gravel has never felt so comfortable in my life. I look over out of the corner of my eye and there's Thomas Zebley yelling at me, "You've got 100 yards. Let's go." So I push myself up off the ground, and going back and looking at the videos, like, even to this day, it's like, wow, you think in your mind you're running, but that was not a run. And finally get to the actual finish line. And I think I like collapsed and fell forward across the finish line instead of actually running all the way through it. But, you know, I get there and I'm just in the fetal position on the ground. Physically, I'm all right. Like, I'm just tired. You know, as I sit there, like, trying to catch my breath, everyone that I work with that knew what was happening, like, they had ridden the gondola up. They're all screaming from the gondolas, "You've got this, keep going." And I'm sitting there and I can see the horizon and the mountains in the background, and it starts to set in. I freaking did it. Throughout all of that, I push myself to a place that even as a former college athlete, I had never been to. And that last lap was faster than my first lap.
My goodness, Kyle, what a story. So you're sitting there and do you start processing this? How do you feel about being there with everybody?
We took a few more minutes, and by the time like we get off the gondola, like it is fully setting in on my legs what has just happened, waddling like a penguin off the gondola to get over there and sit down. Getting to experience that with some of my closest friends, people that I work with day in and day out, it's just hard to put into words like what that 36-hour period of time has done, not just for me, but also to me.
What about your takeaways? Did you take something with you when you left the mountain after that experience that you still reflect on today?
One of the biggest ones that was able to transfer from that time to even today is Jesse's quote of be where your feet are. Be present. Wherever you are, that's where all of your attention and all of your focus needs to be. As a husband and as a father of two little needy kids, that's something that, you know, I am constantly like pulling myself back to that lesson of be where your feet are.
So many times you could have just thrown in the towel. And I think that's a huge lesson that I hear when I'm listening to this is how many times did you have the choice to just opt out? Saturday morning, you wake up and you had a rough day on Friday. You could have opted out. And then you and Mike were hiking up and sure, you get to 11. You could have just opted out. You'd gone far enough. You'd done over 20,000 feet of climbing at that point. But you stayed with it. And I think it goes to that be where your feet are. Where if we stop looking too far ahead and we just keep plugging along, what can we accomplish, even when it seems impossible?
On that last lap in particular, and I forget the lady, like the psychologist or whatever who spoke on Thursday, but you know, she talked about just like the psychology and the impact of when you're going through hard things, smiling, and how that transfers into like tricking your mind more or less. And also how in growing up, every coach I ever had, when you're tired and you're out of breath, said, don't put your hands on your knees and show them you're quitting, like have your hands above your head. And there was sweet vindication on Thursday when she said that science actually proves that wrong. That last lap as I'm going for it and I'm tired, I'm smiling with my hands on my knees, thinking about every coach that ever said, show them you're tougher than that. I'm like, well, you're wrong. Psychology proves you wrong now. And I'm smiling at myself while doing that. There was a lot of perseverance that had to happen through that. And it also just kind of resonates like, know your why. Like, why do you want this? Why do you want to do this event? And there's a dozen things I could think of off the top of my head that would be a great commercial for the event, not just the physical challenge, the physical aspects, but hitting rock bottom and finding out what you're made of, being able to understand what your motivation is for doing this event in and of itself. At the time, I remember Jesse saying, this isn't an endurance race. There are no winners. There are no losers. It's an endurance event. Your challenge is you against that mountain. Why do you want to put yourself through, if we're being fully transparent, some not fun circumstances and do this?
I mean, you're right. If you don't have that strong why behind why you're doing this and why you're going to be willing to suffer through it, it makes it that much harder. But you had a great community around you, your impact community, which you work with on a daily basis. You guys come to the mountain. How was that community? And then how was the community that came with the mountain, that 29029 community, the greater community?
I remember as we're probably a week or two before, like I'm kind of nervous about the whole event. Zebs was just saying that his experience in Vermont, he got to talk to a lot of cool people. He's like, you know, the community there is incredible. There's a lot of people that I had hours of conversations with that I never would have talked to before in my life. And I would challenge everyone, don't put your AirPods in and just go into your own little world. Find someone that you don't know and hike a lap with them. Talk to them about their story. And I got to talk and interact and hike with a lot of different people. And as you'd asked me about, you know, doing this interview, I was kind of going back and listening to some of the other ones. And it was funny, the one I listened to yesterday, I think his name was Andy, Shaz and Zar's dad.
Andy Lausch, yep.
Yes. I hiked an entire lap with Andy and Shaz and Zar. And I put together two and two that Andy was their dad, but we didn't really get into a lot of the story. It was just kind of, what part of the country are you from? What makes you crazy enough to want to do this type conversations. But just being able to interact with different people, as well as people that, you know, I worked with on a daily basis, but hadn't taken the time to, in the busyness of work and everything that we had going on, really understand who they are as a person. I learned more about Mike Weinberger that Saturday morning in the two or three laps that we hiked together than at that point, probably 6 years of working together. That's something that's incredible about the community itself.
Would you say that you walked away from 29029 different than before you started?
The lessons that come from just searching yourself as you're battling yourself and a piece of terrain that is challenging, I don't see how someone could go through that event and not learn something.
Like most stories, Kyle's story doesn't live only in his memories. The impact of this story has shaped all of us who were there on the mountain in Snow Basin 2019. Hearing Kyle retell his story brings back a flood of memories. It puts us right back on the slopes, watching him do the seemingly impossible as he took those last steps to find his Everest. When we see photos and watch videos from that day, we can still feel the power of that moment. It just isn't possible to leave this story without hearing from some of the other voices who accompanied Kyle on the mountain that day. Their perspectives shine an even greater light on how powerful creating moments and opportunities to do hard things in our lives makes us all just a bit better.
I'm Travis McKenzie, and I was privileged enough to work with the 29029 team in 2019 and 2020. I remember seeing Kyle a lot over the weekend. My role on the weekend was to take some photos, but really just immerse myself in the experience so that I could write the story. So I was trying to move myself around for the first couple of days and talk to as many people as possible. And Kyle was someone that I kept seeing. You know, when you're on different kind of movements and different schedules, you quite often you'll see the same people over and over again. And Kyle was one of those guys. And this was the first real time that we had set up kind of the party at the top of the hill. And I remember more and more people gathering. And at this point, because I was stationary, I was starting to, you know, see him and other people kind of more consistently. But he was somebody that really stood out to me as he, you know, he was continuing to work, but he was slowing down and he was starting to look a little bit dejected, and it was hot and, you know, getting towards the 36th hour of the event. So every, you know, naturally is starting to fade a little bit. And then on the last, his second last lap, so 11 summits, I could see that he was, he would have been proud of his effort there. The timing was very, very tight for him to consider doing this. I think his fastest lap up until that point was, you know, over an hour. He probably had about 56 minutes to go from memory, so under an hour. But I could tell just by kind of looking in his eye that he wanted a little bit more. I could tell just from looking in his eyes that there was something more that he wanted to get out of this experience. So I, you know, I pulled him aside, and as he's walking to the gondola to take the trip down, I grabbed him on the shoulder and I said, "You can do this. Like, this is going to take everything that you possibly have in you, but you can do it." He said, "Do you think I can?" I said, "Of course you can. You just have to move. You have to get moving right now." You know, I think he reluctantly decided or agreed that that was a good idea. And in the meantime, you know, I went back to the group and I rallied the troops, and Mark was there and Brent was there. And, you know, we started to kind of get on the radios and get messages down that he was in fact going to make the attempt and try to beat his best ascent by a long ways and get to 29029. And then it was like a game of telephone that, you know, we started to let people know that yes, he's doing it. And people started to rally at the top, and there was, you know, it was probably 50-50. People were thinking that there's no way he can possibly do it. You know, the rumors were starting. But he, you know, he was doing it, and people were, you know, amazed by the fact that he was actually giving it a try. And then in Utah at Snow Basin, you can kind of see the last court third of the course, where it flattens out a little bit, and then it kind of kicks back up, and there's some switchbacks where you can actually see the participants coming from quite a ways away. And it was incredible. There was people standing on top of the hill, and they were shouting down. They were shouting encouragement. They were giving him every little bit of energy that they possibly had to draw him into the finish line. And it felt like it was taking forever because it's, you know, it's the last third of the lap, but he didn't look like he was moving super fast, but he was definitely making forward progress. And as it got closer and closer, I could kind of see the look in his eye. I could see the look in Mark's eye. I could see the look in Brent's eye that they had all just really experienced something incredible. All of them just had this look of complete pride and joy and exhaustion and emotion in their eyes. And I remember Kyle running towards the finish line, you know, and there's a crowd of people following around. There's people with their phones out. And I knew from being, you know, at many finish lines in my past that as soon as he gets across the line, he's basically going to fall over. You know, his body is going to give out because he's given such a mental effort to get there. You know, I anticipated that, and I was there right at the finish line, and true to my thought, he did fall into my arms, and I just grabbed him, you know, and I was so emotional, and he was kind of just out of it. And I looked at him and I said, "You fucking did it." And he kind of just looked up at me with a blank stare. And, you know, at this time there was a lot of people kind of gathering around. So I just placed him kind of on the ground, and there's this beautiful photo, you know, if you go back to the stories, where he's just sitting on the ground and people are just standing there applauding him and looking at him in awe. And I knew that kind of in that moment that not only his life had changed, but, you know, many of the people who were there, their lives had changed from actually just, you know, witnessing what had happened. And it was certainly an incredible memory that I have of that experience. And, you know, we've written many times that the last lap is free, but for that, on that day, and for Kyle McClung, the last lap definitely wasn't free, and he'd more than paid his dues to experience the incredible achievement of completing 29.029.
Hey, this is Brent Pease, head coach of 29.029 Everesting. My first event that I attended in person was the 2019 Snow Basin event. And I actually got a call on my cell phone, I remember, from Mark Hodelik, one of the founders. And he said, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'd just gotten to the top." And he said, "Well, I need you to start coming backwards down the mountain. You need to find us. We're with Kyle, and he's got a chance to finish." And I didn't know who Kyle was at the time. I had not met him during that weekend. But Mark told me what he needed. So I started running down the mountain and got to where aid station 3 is, right before kind of the rock scramble, as some folks like to call it. And there was Kyle with Mark Hodelik, and they were running, and Mark was grabbing stuff from the aid station, and I hadn't seen anybody run that section. And as Kyle got there, you know, we basically told him, you know, "Look, you can finish, but you got to listen to me." And, you know, from that moment, I just remember, you know, kind of barking orders at him, even barking orders at the other people that were starting to join us. Our group had grown from just a few people to several of us. It was just really impressive. I mean, he was, you know, emptying himself. And that's just so much about what this event is about, you know, finding the things within yourself that you didn't know were there, that the parts of you that people always told you existed and you just didn't know how to pull them out. And so it wasn't just that Kyle was trying to be the final finisher of that weekend, but he represented what so many other people had done that weekend and what so many continue to do in this community, and was just personally really just blown away watching him pour himself out, getting to that finish line. And I remember screaming as we were coming towards the top, just screaming, "Your line, your line." And I felt like at that moment, the finish area, it belongs to you at that moment, because you're the one who got yourself there. You're the one who put in the 20 weeks of training to get to that moment. And it's just such a special part of that experience that we all get to witness. And Mark, myself, and Coach Chris, and some others were able to bear witness to what Kyle put himself through. and I'm honored to be a part of this community and all of those stories.
I've really enjoyed reliving the Kyle McClung story because as co-founder and CEO, that experience just seemed to encapsulate everything that I thought 29029 could be. There's been many amazing finishes and heroic feats on the mountain, but from day one, we as a company said that we were going to care the most. And when Kyle had an opportunity to give up on himself, to quit at 12 hikes and have an amazing accomplishment, he decided to give it one more shot and go up the mountain one more time when pretty much all the odds were stacked against him. And this is before we had a slew of coaches on the mountain and before we knew average hike times and cutoffs. And we were still gathering information. We were still building a team and a community, but we all cared. And at that moment, I saw from writers and storytellers we had on the mountain and Travis McKenzie to volunteers, to coaches like Brent Peace, and even myself, just how much I cared about Kyle's finish and supporting him as he attempted to do something great and that maybe not he even believed in and of himself that he could do. And in those moments where he went back down the gondola, I was thinking to myself, what an amazing outcome this could be, but also just, you know, how deflating it would be to see someone try so hard and come so close and not finish and really wanting it for him really bad and wanting it for everyone else who was rooting him on. And without even realizing it was happening, as he was coming up, we were over the radio. I'm not allowed to have a radio. And I was getting from Garth and others, you know, what kind of progress he was making and trying to determine if he was on pace to finish or not. And realized I wasn't doing all that I could do. And there was a moment where I just started running down the mountain, realizing that he needed someone to potentially help pace him and push him even more than he was already pushing himself. And I caught him somewhere around mid-mountain and hiked with him for 10 to 15 minutes until I was joined by Coach Brent Peace, who I handed him off to. He was in much better hands with Coach Brent than myself. But you know, during that time, I just saw in Kyle someone that was willing to face the unknown, was willing to be vulnerable and potentially fail with everyone watching him, but he also put himself in a position to do something great. And it was just beautiful to see not only him do that, but Thomas Zebley and the rest of the Impact Partners crew, all of our staff and volunteers, how invested everyone was in just giving him the opportunity. And I always knew that could exist. I felt like 29029 since day one could be something that brought out the best in people, made others root for each other and not compete against each other. And certainly that happened in moments before Kyle, and it's happened in many after. But that one moment in time was when it just all clicked. And for me, it was just so gratifying to see something that had been in my head and those of others, of our founders, Jesse and Colin, and the team that's been there from the beginning, just see it really manifest into something that was playing out in real time and that everyone cared about in a very deep way. I'm also just really proud that we put this together and that as a community, we, you know, came together in this beautiful place to give people an opportunity to do something great and that people continue to do something great. So anyone listening can have a story like Kyle McClung's. And you have to sign up. You have to put something big on your calendar. If it's not our event, do something else that scares you. Put yourself in a position where you could potentially fail and surround yourself with others that care about your outcome and care about what's best for you. And I think you'll be really surprised with what you can do.
There you have it. My Everest, the latest episode of the 29029 podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about 29029 events or read more stories from an incredible community of individuals, you can head over to 29029everesting.com. That's 29029everesting.com. I'm Colleen Rue, the voice of the mountain. Keep climbing. We'll meet you at the next summit.